Welcome, welcome. We have a really exciting edition of Overcoming Long Haul COVID and Chronic Fatigue. We have Kelly Halderman with us today. Kelly is an MD, family practitioner, who with her own health crisis had to turn to looking little other directions for help. And she did quite a bit of study in traditional naturopathic training, and has moved on into the world of, you know, of science and research. And we're going to hear a lot about what she's doing today. But first of all, tell me and tell the audience a little bit more about what moved you from family practice to just good health practice.
Yeah, definitely quite a story for, you know, a hallmark of where my life definitely changed. You know, I was practicing medicine and I was really good at it, Dr. Eric. I was scored in the 99th percentile on my boards. You know, I mean, like I could match those symptoms and diagnoses and doing great until I got a diagnosis of MS. And I realized at that point, all the tools in my toolkit, everything I learned, the $300,000 that I paid to go to medical school, I didn't have the right tools to fix myself. It's a disease that we call idiopathic in medicine. And that means that we don't understand its origins. We don't understand what caused it. And so that was the first time I really was faced with the decision, do I stay in this allopathic model where there are no options for me to heal? Or do I save my own life? Not to be hyperbolic, but that's exactly what I did. I went and got naturopathic training. I learned about nutrition and detoxification and things. You know, Dr. Eric, we don't learn those things quite well in traditional medical school. I think it's getting better, but at that point, I had to go find that education. I had to apply it to myself. I ended up having as my root cause Lyme and mold, sneaky. And when I got my diagnosis, that helped to start healing. And I've been on trajectory since then. It's been about 10 years now. That's really, really catapulted me into amazing health. I mean, like I've never felt so good in my entire life. And I'm just a person who strives for knowledge. I don't like that the New England Journal of Medicine says themselves that we're 17 years behind what's in those studies and the we're not applying it in the clinic. And so people like yourself, your clinic that you're running, I'm always looking for not what's new and sexy, but really like, what are we missing here? You know, and that's what started with myself, my own health journey. So I don't practice medicine anymore. I don't even practice clinical medicine anymore because I moved into the biotech space. I've been really excited to join up with a company called WEO as their chief medical officer, and I get to design clinical trials. But our company is centered around water. We're going to talk a little bit about that because we really underestimate the power of water. There's so much we don't know about it, and just beyond hydration, like things beyond hydration. Everybody knows it's good to drink water, but yeah, that's my story. And that's who I am.
Well, I'm always impressed by how many, physicians, have had their own health journeys and, makes a big difference for understanding where the fallibilities and limitations are of our training, I always, people have said this a million times, we're great when you get, you're going to die in the moment. We're really good. But if you got something that's chronic, we're not so good. So on that note, we're going to talk about, where the intersections of, things that you've been studying in chronic inflammation and long COVID. And I said we were going to start with a caveat, because one of the articles that I think is excellent article and that you really wanted to kind of riff off today is co-authored by Dr. Shoemaker, who I said I have great respect for. I've had long interviews with him on other podcasts in the past. And he coined this term, SIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, I believe. And my issue with it is that those of you who've been listening know that I firmly believe that all chronic illness is chronic inflammation. And I don't care if it's hypertension, diabetes, or long COVID. It's inflammation, depending on different tissues, but it's inflammation. And I do believe that Dr. Shoemaker's model is very powerful and very useful, but just remember that it's talking about what I think is a subset, but I think a really important one, and one that he has helped us develop a lot of good tools. So, I mean, my hat goes off to him. He and Dr. Heyman have done, I think, a lot of really good work. So on that note, tell us a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on Sears and long COVID.
Yeah, so I think what I'm gonna start off is by talking about how it's supposed to go right. So like what's supposed to happen in our body. So we have two arms of our immune system, basically. We have our innate arm, and then we have an adaptive arm. And our innate arm is the non-specific, go after things, our bodily fluids, our neutrophils, things that are just that first line of protection. So typically if we get a virus, we get a pathogen, we'll be encountered by those foot soldiers. They're out there, they're trying to get rid of the infection, get rid of the pathogen. And then what happens is that adaptive side, it's smart, it's brilliant, it's specific. It needs to be turned on. And the cell that actually communicates between these two is a dendritic cell. A dendritic cell will go and it'll take a bite off of a pathogen, a bite off of COVID, let's say, and it'll take an epitope of that and it'll present it to a T cell. It'll present it to a T cell of the adaptive immune system. And then a T cell sets off the adaptive immune system so that we can be specific. We can create antibodies, memory cells. And so the inherent problem is that in 22% of the population, that exquisite, important, you know, that piece of physiology that is so imperative that we get right in immunology in our body, 22% of the population struggle with that antigen presenting. What happens? What happens when you don't present the antigen to the adaptive immune system is that the innate immune system stays on full bore. It sets out inflammagens, cytokines, and we're in a chronic inflammatory response syndrome. Now, again, Dr. Eric nailed it when he said that if you have hypertension, if you, you know, high cholesterol things, you, that is this, you know, that would be a chronic inflammatory response. So keep in mind that I'm talking about a subset, something that was named by Dr. Shoemaker, CIRS, talking about a syndrome that's specific. And I want to tie it into a paper. So if I may, Dr. Eric, I'm going to talk about kind of now the paper that really, really sparked this conversation about, okay, long haul Sears, what in the heck do they have to do with each other? Well, I'm going to read you the title. So people who want to go look this paper up, we can, and I'm going to give you a cliff notes, but I'm just going to let you know. So it's from January 21, Medical Research Archives. The title is Treatable Metabolic and Inflammatory Abnormalities in Post-COVID Syndrome Define the Transcriptomic Basis for Persistent Symptoms, Lessons from Sears. So what this paper found in essence is that in Sears, you will have the presence of molecular hypometabolism. You will have proliferative physiology. You'll have ribosomal response, stress response. You'll have gene activation of TGFBR, and you'll also have co-expression of two important, the toll receptor and the CD14. Okay, so those are what we see in that. What they're saying is that there is a definite link between these two, because what they did in this study is they said, wow, you know, a lot of this long haul, they sure have the same presentation as the Sears patients. And again, Sears patients, they have symptom clusters, and there's 13 symptom clusters. And if you answer positive in 8 of the 13, there's a 95% chance that you can be diagnosed with Sears. Okay. So what they're saying is that there's a lot of similarities in fatigue, brain fog, you know, definitely like myalgias, all these really matching symptoms of people with long haul. So the question at hand is in the paper is there a correlation between the two? And they indeed found that there is a correlation between, I can actually go to the exact numbers. It says post-COVID syndrome negative patients had an average of 8.2 symptoms and no VCS abnormalities. Now that's called a visual contrast test. Just going to rabbit hole that real quickly. So the VCS test, visual contrast test, That is a test that you can do online. It's about $13, takes about 10 minutes. Everybody at home, you can do this yourself. What happens is when you have a biotoxin illness, your ability to see contrast will change. And so 10% of the population can have a false negative in that they have some brain inflammation, but they can pass it. But what they're saying is that 8.2 had symptoms in the negative and no VCS. There's no changes in this simple test that you can use the VCS test. And we'll come back to that if we need to talk to it about it again. But in the post-COVID group, they had an average of 18.2 symptoms and 75% showed deficits in their visual contrast test. Again, we're comparing a SIRS patient, so someone who's been diagnosed with chronic inflammatory response syndrome, to someone who's got long haul. Okay, that's what we're looking at in this paper.
And so the 18 symptoms were people, those were the long haul patients.
So the 13 symptom clusters, those are what is used to in the series.
That gives you a hint. So the fact that these people have 18, they really passed the test.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
They really did.
So they make the cut. Yeah. And the visual contrast test is something that we've used over the years to look for, toxin affecting the system. And, you know, just said people like baseball players can beat the test. You know, anybody
that's
who
right.
can like see really had vision as
pilots,
very, or yep. designers, like, you know, interior designers, you know, people who have very fine color and shade discrimination, mostly yep. shade discrimination, can beat the test. But the vast majority of us, you know, if we fail it, there's probably a toxin in there or something is affecting the ability of your of energy to get to your retinal cells. So that's always a nice test. So basically they're seeing a really, which I think makes a lot of sense because, you know, the innate immune system is what got turned on with COVID and the adaptive didn't pick up the baton like it should have. And that's what's going to get us into long COVID and where a piece keeps going. So continue. So were they able to break out subsets or was it just kind of like all long COVID?
It was basically all long COVID. So having been diagnosed with the post COVID, like a long haul type picture.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that the interesting part of it is that I don't think that the authors were saying everyone with long haul has SIRS. I don't think that's what they're saying,
no.
But that when you look at SIRS, you look at the root cause and they've boiled it down to basically, you know, mold, actinomyces. And so the authors are saying in this paper that not everyone who has long haul, but could you be a person who is stuck in this innate inflammatory storm? Could this be the reason why? So if that is the reason why, if you're in a water damaged building, if you're around actinomyces, if you have mold toxins, and then you get COVID on top of that, could that push you into that? Or maybe you already had chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And then they have published that their protocol helps relieve the symptoms, helps get you out of like their SIRS, right? So that's what
right.
they're saying. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, what's so interesting is that this is a story that we've repeated several times, but I think it bears, you know, constant reminding that we don't have a denominator on this, but it's clear that many, many people with long haul had a pre-existing mm-hmm. condition that might have been subclinical, you mm-hmm. know, that we just didn't notice. And we talked a lot about it with the, you know, persistent Epstein-Barr things, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, you might have been the person who got fatigued for 3 months after you had mono and thought you got all better, but didn't mm-hmm. realize that, that once that happens, there's something off with your CD8 cells and that might bite you later. And the same thing here is that you've been exposed and you have you're wounded, but you don't know it yet. And
right.
the COVID and COVID will really make these things come out, like your
that's
sensitivity
right.
to the mycotoxins that everybody's exposed to. That's,
yeah.
that is very, very, yeah, that's what we see. And it is nice that Dr. Shoemaker has put all this together in a way, in a treatment regimen that you know, we find that sometimes is very effective.
Right. And I think, again, it's like, it's worth noting that you have all the walking unwell, as Jim Lavelle, brilliant Jim Lavelle, would say, like, we have this enormous population who they go to get their checkups and their blood pressure's fine, or they're on blood pressure medication to make it fine. And their blood sugar fasting is 99. So you're good. I mean, like, all these, you know, things that are screaming, no, you know, and then you're talking about like a population that might be living in a moldy environment, might be at work with a mold infested office, or might have actinomyces is kind of their new step up. Is that where that's what they're finding, which is different from mold, but again, it's a biotoxin, right?
Yeah.
So you're living with something really like COVID really pushes on your system. And then now you're really stuck. Like, you're really stuck in this chronic inflammatory response. And your genetics, we should kind of go into this a little bit, is that on chromosome 6, the MHC class 2 resides right there. And so that's where you'll find the expression for
Is this his 4? What he used to give a very bad name to that we won't use?
Yeah, I think that's what it's,
that's right. Yeah. No, that was, I mean, I said, I've learned a lot from Dr. Shoemaker, but there's one thing that I think he did a disservice when he gave a bad name to a genetic tendency that made people feel like they were really going to be in big trouble if they had this gene, yet 20 to 22% of the population has this gene.
Yeah.
So it's probably not so bad. It's mitigated by many other things. It's just that in some people it can be, but I was always upset because the way it sounded, like, oh my God, I have this and that's over.
The word, exactly. Yeah, and I think you're totally right, Dr. Eric, because, you know, our genetics don't determine what's going on. I mean, you know, in this instance, I would say like this HLA-DR, you know, it gives you the propensity to not be able to antigen present. And again, you may see why, like, even if you're not a scientist, you're not a doctor, you may see why there's two arms of the immune system and they're supposed to be balanced and doing their job and reacting appropriately, handing off. You know, if one side's stuck on, it just doesn't seem right, right? So you might have a genetic predisposition, but that doesn't mean that you're the F word.
It's going to happen to you. It may not. And that's the other thing we have to remember is that anytime you have something that's in 22% of people, there's a good chance that it's probably has something a little positive as well.
Of course.
We might not know about yet, because usually things that are in that many folks have something good, or these bad traits kind of go away. So, but that being said, it's really interesting and important. And this is I think it's the 4353 or something like that. 4350. Yeah. 4353. And, you know, and there's several subsets of this, and, you know, these people do have a higher incidence of some, autoimmune diseases as well. But, you know, but again, as Kelly is pointing out, this is not, does not determine your fate. Much else in how you live your life makes a bigger difference than whether you have this gene or not. But that being said, it's important. If you do have it, it lets you know you should be a little careful about getting stuck in chronic innate inflammation, which is what causes lots of our chronic illnesses.
Right. And that's why I think, you know, like, let's say you do have long haul, you have symptoms of long haul. I think this is like a subset where it's like, well, you know what? The VCS test is $13. Well, first of all, if you can see a practitioner like Dr. Eric, go see Dr. Eric, right? That's first of course. But, like, you know, like, we're kind of left in this day and age with, we're kind of getting these morsels of information, and some you just don't know what to do, and you don't know what, you know, you don't want to spend your money on an anti-COVID long haul supplement. I mean, how dumb is that, right? Like, you know, you really need to be judicious with some of these things, like simply taking a VCS test, like just seeing and recall and remember the caveat that if you have an occupation or you have a hobby that makes you very attuned to contrast, pilots, you know, tennis players, baseball players, you know, people who have to see things very, you may have a false negative, but like if that's positive, then okay, then maybe go to surviving mold, look at the 13 clusters. Look at it. Okay. Then do you think that maybe you have this type of chronic inflammatory response syndrome going on, you know, like you go back to foundations again, you go back to, you know, fixing the gut and brain inflammation and everything. And it's just kind of a different approach, a little bit more new, I would say nuanced. I think you'd agree, because the end step of the pyramid is always VIP, which is vaso-intestinal peptide, which I don't necessarily, when I practice, I don't agree with. You know, so I think that the Shoemaker protocol, which is the Sears, they try to put everybody in this, like, this is your pyramid. We talked about this, Dr. Eric and I, yeah. This is your pyramid, and this is how we're going to get you better. Step one, step two, step. It's kind of like all over the place, right? It's really,
they're all useful steps. They are useful steps, and it's up to you and your doctor to figure out which ones you need. Yes, it's a dance, but no, but again, and this is why I really appreciate Kelly bringing up Dr. Shoemaker's work, which we hadn't focused on. And I think we use a lot of parts of his protocols over, you know, for our patients, because they are very, very helpful and useful. And it's really, this is just another piece. And that's what I keep telling people, is what's frustrating is if you're sick, you need an answer, or you want an answer. Yeah, and you need an answer. And it can be difficult when you're being presented with like this smorgasbord, if you will, this buffet of like all these different things. And that, unfortunately, is where, you know, it's good to listen to these things, see what resonates with you, read, find practitioners, talk. You know, because you got to find what works for you. And I think what Dr. Halderman is really being clear about is that it's a dance. But the more important part is there are answers, you know, maybe not for 100%, but there are a lot of answers out there. And what I'd like to make sure that we have time to talk about too, what excited me the more I talked to you before we started was about the water piece. Because inflammation, water, I mean, we didn't do a lot on water in this series yet.
We can now.
But we're going to now, you know, because you know, just as an aside to people, you know, if you ever read Dr. Pollack, structured water thing, it's this revolutionary way to think about the body. And there's many, Dr. Cowan, his book about his cardiology book that he wrote. Again, fascinating way to realize how, you know, there are alternative stories of how the body works. I believe they're accurate. I say alternative because, you know, it hasn't made mainstream yet, but I have great respect for Dr. Pollack's just research and work over the years. I just think like many, many brilliant thinkers, nobody quite, when you're getting a new story, no field likes new stories.
Nope, that's right. Science evolves one funeral at a time.
Yeah. I mean, it's very frustrating because people think science is science, but no, science is ego and power and money. And there's science in there. But the good part is eventually the quote unquote the scientific truth does come out, but it can take 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. It's not always quick. So with that, talk to us more about water.
So, you know, water, it just sounds boring. It sounds like we've heard this from like the day we can remember, like drink water. And so I think we're dulled to its powerfulness, like you're saying, to what we don't know about it. And so I've always been mildly obsessed with water along this journey. I knew there were aspects of water that we didn't quite understand. You nailed it when you talked about Dr. Gerald Pollack's work in the fourth phase of water. I mean, how absolutely mind-blowing. And you know, that's just the surface, because if you look at Asia and Europe, what they know about water, just it's just so enormous compared to what we over here in the United States understand about water. And there's so much that we do not understand. We just don't understand. And so what I was recruited into to come into this company called WEO to do was to run clinical trials on the water that we have, because we have a patented technology that transforms water, it augments the water into different components. So it actually like will restructure the water. It will create components that are actually known to be in the literature, like very well studied, anti-inflammatory. One of the components is molecular hydrogen, just one. So let's highlight one. So with this, let's kind of tie it back to like, if your brain's on fire, if your brain's inflamed, if you have long haul, you really need to quell that inflammation, right? And root cause, but like we can use some really strategic band-aids. And so I like molecular hydrogen because it's a selective antioxidant. When you take antioxidants like vitamin C and vitamin E, they have to be recycled and they actually turn into oxidants in your body. And they scavenge everything. Now, molecular hydrogen, it doesn't need to be transformed. It does its job. It donates electron and it doesn't scavenge the signaling molecules that are oxidative, but helpful. They're helpful because they attack cancer cells in your body. So you really don't want to just bombard your body with a bunch of antioxidants. Just the literature would say that's a bad idea. And so the selective antioxidant hydrogen, it's really a powerful one. I mean, we look at exercise performance, we look at anti-inflammatory markers of longevity, telomere length, methylation status, and we look at all the things that can do to that. But here's what I really think is cool. It's very simple. We really need things to get to the brain, don't we? I mean, we really need to reach that brain that's on fire, okay? Molecular hydrogen goes everywhere. It's the smallest molecule, like on the atomic chart. And so I just absolutely love that component of using, so if you're going to drink water, again, there's so many different options. You can go low deuterium, like a structured water, you know, like the way water works in our body is phenomenal. It's not just fill up your glass from your tap water and drink it. You know, there's just so many other aspects to it. And we could talk a whole hour about the importance of water for bile flow. I mean, bile is your exit strategy for your toxins. I mean, you are constantly being bombarded with toxins. You have to have an exit strategy. Bile is 99% aqueous, 98 or 99. You have got to have hydration on board just for that reason. And then your kidneys are going to be excreting, you know, toxins and things too. And we're going to take it on back again to chronic inflammatory response, whether you are, talking about the Shoemaker syndrome, or we're talking about chronic inflammatory response, like Dr. Rick said, it's in everybody who has chronic illness. You have chronic inflammatory response. So I think that's a strategy where it's like, you know, you need to drink 8 glasses, at least of water a day, you know, you have to do that. So, you know, why not choose something that has all these other properties that come along with it?
And, you know, so what more than, because hydrogen water is something, yeah, we've used for a while with good results. I mean, it's interesting, as you said, it immediately quenches those hydroxyl radicals in the brain, which is really difficult thing to do, and nice, you know, even after head trauma and stuff, we find it helpful. But what other things are you using that's making this water different?
Yeah. So, you know, we use a diamond boron coated doped electrolysis process. So we really use a pretty complicated process to actually electrolyze and change the water. And we're putting energy in the water, right? So it's like everybody's walking around energy depleted. It's like, you know, we put things in, we eat a lot foods that are alive, plants are alive, you know, for that energetic, we go in the sun for its energy. You know, the water has been through electrolysis energized. And so we're drinking that energized water. We have dissolved oxygen in it as well. We have a microdose of ozone in there as well. We're studying some of the properties that we are just discovering. We've been around for about 15, 20 years. We've been in agriculture. We are in agriculture. We're helping to grow healthier animals with no pesticides, no hormones or anything, and better agriculture. And so now we're shifting into the humans. And again, all the research that's been done, and internally, we're seeing things that we're helping the evidence. These aren't published studies, but the evidence we're seeing is that we're increasing the immune balance. We're studying breast cancer. We're studying athletic performance. We're studying cellular senescence, which is a hallmark of aging, which, you know, I read a paper, Dr. Eric, 2 days ago, a colleague shared a paper with me saying that the larger your burden of senescent cells, which for everybody, they're just zombie cells that just stop dividing, but the zombie cells spit out really inflammagens. The higher your burden of those, the more likely you are to have long COVID. So if you could be preventatively drinking water or using something that will decrease your senescent cells, that might be a long-term a good strategy.
Yeah. No, I mean, just one thing I don't think we've done, what we were thinking of doing is just, you know, strategies to perhaps remove spike protein, which is kind of in the same ballpark, is because many times spike is hiding in a cell that is senescent, that is no longer responding to the signals which it should be getting to die. And if you can get that cell to either rebuild or die, move off its butt where it's stuck, is so important. And water, just to let people know what's so fascinating about the structured water concept is that water has a charge at the border where it borders a surface. Okay. And when you, by adding more energy into water, you increase that charge. And that's why, you know, they find that, you know, just little things that people have done in school experiments forever, like, you know, put water out in the sun for a day and then feed your plants, you know, they grow better. And this is the stuff. But unfortunately in America, there was some debunking of water science back in the 60s and 70s. There were some studies from Russia, and then somebody decided that they couldn't be reproduced. And it became, you know, a pile-on that after that, whatever I mean by a pile-on, it's sort of like everybody jumped on that research. It's all bogus. And it became like nobody studies water much in America because, we know all about it.
It's stigma water. Almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, it's been very difficult thing because, okay, I don't want to keep criticizing medicine and science, but I can tell you it works this way. If I don't know about it, it can't be that important.
That's right.
Okay. And I suffer from the same. I mean, I have to watch myself. If somebody tells
You're
me
so
something
humble.
New, no, but it's true. If somebody tells me something new, there is that spark in me for a moment that wants to go, I don't know about it. Probably isn't worth anything. You know, until you go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But you got to catch yourself. Uh-huh. And that's the nature of ego. And that's the nature of doctors and scientists. So it's really hard when something has been pushed into the edge as being obviously obvious and kind of, you know, not very good science. If you're going to look at it, you have an uphill battle. And that's where I'm excited about the work you folks are doing and the fact that you're designing experiments, because that's what we need. You're actually planning to do like human experiments? Because I mean, most of the time things kind of end at the test tube.
No, not at all. That brought me in to design human clinical trials. So we're going to be doing those this year. Yeah, we have a compendium of really robust research with partners from all over the world. And like you said, ex vivo, in vivo, you know, so compelling that it's like, okay, time to put this into, you know, human and come out with some great data. Again, you know, we have so much evidence. That's why I took this role, because I was just absolutely blown away with our evidence. So, but it's going to be the icing on the cake. It really is. And we're really very, very
excited. That's great. But then you got to get it published in something that people will read. that's the next step in science. But, you know, with this,
your help.
but with this in mind, I'm now saying, so you've got the water, because that's the anti-inflammatory effects of water, and tying it in for everybody. And with the, you know, with going back to Sears, I keep thinking about you know, just from your experience, because you spent a lot, you spent a fair amount of time with Dr. I believe with Dr. Heyman, right? You know, so what did you find when you were measuring things and looking at people? Because I said, in my mind, you know, again, the long COVID or long haul is just another but it's an inflammatory condition. What were your big things that you thought really stood out to help you, like make a decision point for people? Okay, I'm going to do this instead of that.
Yeah, and I think that we should probably talk about the Genie test then, because the, you know, the Genie test is the test that Dr. Shoemaker and Dr. Heyman and the Sears community will recommend. It's a nanostring test that basically measures the proteomics and transcriptomics of what's going on in your body, right? And so you can use this test, and it has several categories with genes that are turned on and turned off. And they've done, they have so much data that they can kind of tell, like, where do you fit in? Do you, or do you still have Lyme? You know, do, are your histamine genes acting up? You know, like the Sears genes turned on, turned off. And that gives them, I think, like a piece of the puzzle. Now, do I think that it's imperative? No, because as I just said, and this is published in their paper, if you answer yes to 8 out of 13 categories, you're looking at, you know, a diagnosis is pretty close to what they're looking at. And then you combine it with the VCS test, and now you're like even closer to what, you know, their treatment protocol would be. I would say that, like we were just talking about, you know, they have a specific treatment protocol, like step-by-step. And I would think that I, in my opinion, that it's more nuanced. It's more of a patient by patient. You know, I do believe that I had full blown Sears. I failed my VCS test. I had Lyme, I had mold, I had everything. I had the biotoxin. I think that I was in, that innate immune system was on fire. Everyone always asked me, what did you do, Dr. Halderman, to get better? What did you do? And I'm like, I just kept unloading the stresses just one by one. You know, like Horowitz, when he says that you have 16 nails in your foot and we're going to take out three, you know, I still felt like crap, but I'm just going to take this and I'm going to start doing this. And then, you know, like just keep on keeping on. And I don't think there's not, I mean, I believe in principles, not protocols. And so especially with long haul, I mean, especially because there's like a lot of things out there, and I don't like people who get taken advantage of. I don't like people who get overpromised and under-delivered upon. And so, again, I think my takeaway was like, I, in my opinion, you didn't really need to use the triangle approach. Like, on it, you didn't need to use that protocol on everyone. Not everyone, in my opinion, needed to end with VIP to get better.
Right, right. It's step by step. But again, you know what? One thing that always I've been finding very intriguing since we started the long COVID or long haul series, has been, you know, just like what you went to study, you know, in naturopathy, it keeps coming back to sleep.
Yeah.
And, you know, sense of, you know, a little bit of be able to relax and feel safe in your body, and the right nutrition, and the, you know, right amount and a little bit of activity, whatever your body can tolerate. And now, you know, making sure the water is included in the nutrition, but it's, and the and then, you know, and then maybe when you're ready, a little detox. You know, we have lots of, I mean, I have to admit, myself as a practitioner, because I spent so much time in my younger days in hospital medicine, and just enamored with medicine, which is magic world of, oh, I'm going to give you this and you're going to be better, you know, which doesn't really work, but we make the symptom better. And that love of symptom relief that I have sometimes gets me to, you know, jump the gun and not be patient enough, because the sleep and nutrition and feeling safe, I mean, those are, if those don't come into play, it's rare that people really get well.
That's right. That's 100% right. Yeah, I totally believe in those foundations. It really is. But, you know, a lot of patients, you know, their melanocyte stimulating hormone is in the toilet, and so their gut's leaky because of that. And that kind of goes back to Sears. So that, you know, there's all kinds of different, like you said, like a lot of people are going to need a very skilled practitioner to go in and not just cover up symptoms. Like we're really good at that, right? We have MD after our names. Like we can totally do that. But really dig down. And maybe, you know, like if a practitioner is listening, maybe just read this paper and just put it in your toolkit, just put it on in, just kind of think like, okay, perhaps they have like, they're living in a moldy building, or they, they visited their family in South Carolina and they were there for a month and they got sick with COVID there or some, you know, just put it in your toolkit. And if you're a person who has long haul, again, like maybe find like, you know, like a practitioner like Dr. Eric, who he knows these people, he knows Dr. Shoemaker. I mean, he knows Navio, he knows, he understands this and he's not going to like throw a protocol at you and wash his hands. Right. I mean, like,
That's, you know, I mean, you know, the good news is that for the people who do use protocols is that sometimes they work.
There's a bell curve, I don't use them.
I don't use them because I usually wind up, you know, seeing people who failed the protocols already. But, you know, I have to look back and remember that the reason they're out there is that some people actually work. But I think you saw sick enough people over the years that you realize you got the people who the protocols didn't work for. That's right. And that's what happens, you know, in that first year, you can use protocols and you do well. But by the second or third year, they're not working so well anymore. You're paying attention, you know, because getting more and more complex patients who need pieces. And that's what I love. You just mentioned like the MSH is a great thing because, you know, that's something that I just had three ideas and I didn't say anything. What I meant to say is that sometimes things I use to help symptoms also are working at deeper levels. Sure. So I constantly don't give, because I sometimes a little disrespectful of my own style, you know, because it's got such a medical overlay of like, oh, I want to mitigate that symptom, uh-huh. you know. But now I guess that the trick is to mitigate the symptom with something that actually helps the symptom heal, uh-huh. rather than something that merely suppresses it. You know, and that's where you brought like something like MSH and the peptides that will help heal, that are things your body makes for this purpose. It's just that right now you're not making enough of it. So maybe if we give you the right signal, your system will then begin to respond and enter this healing phase. You know, something we've talked about a bit is that it's the signaling issues. You can't scream at the body very well. Best to just give it little hints of where you want it to go.
Yeah. And the body is so intelligent. I mean, you have to remember that when you're sick, it could be appropriate, completely appropriate. Like if, you know, if something's going on in your mitochondria are not responding, I mean, that then you're not, your physiology is actually like the opposite, you know, like people say, my body's broken. I feel horrible. And it's like, no. Your body's getting the exact stimulus it needs to act this way, right? So that Dr. Eric Balcavage and I wrote a book about the thyroid debacle because people think, oh my gosh, my thyroid has turned against me. Like my body's broken. I'm making all these antibodies. My doctor told me like, I'm broken because I'm making antibodies. It's like, no, hold up. You're actually responding appropriately to your environment. You're responding appropriately. And I mean, this is the king here of the cell danger responses. All the research came out of your collaboration. So, you know, I think people might ask if they're savvy, like what's the correlation between a cell danger response that's been set off and like a Sears chronic inflammatory response. I think they're, you know, like like you said, when we started, it's a concept. Right?
So yeah.
More of a concept.
It's a concept. It's a concept that you can fit in. And by the way, it's Dr. Navio's. I talk to him a lot about it, but it's his. I wish okay.
You're associated with it.
I fell in love with it because it explained nothing. I couldn't understand how all these antioxidants, which in the 90s, that was the game.
Yes.
But they didn't work in my patients. And I kept feeling like, what was wrong? And then I read this paper and it was like, it made so much sense from what I saw that uh-huh. you had to get the body ready to change. You know, it's that old story, you know, you can bring the horse to water, but then you got to entice it. You can't force them. And that's what it's like. It's this healing. And mm-hmm. these are all, that's it. You know, at the end of the day, Sears or the cell danger response, they're all ways that we're all concepts that we mm-hmm. use to try to understand, mm-hmm. you know, what's appearing on the planet right now, because, you know, we have more of these chronic illnesses than we've ever had. And I said, and you hit it. It's like, you know, when you're talking about the thyroid, it's your environment. Your body is responding to the environment. Don't kill the body, change the environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I like that a lot. I think that should be a thought, you know, every doctor should keep in front of their eyes when the patient comes in is with these illnesses, especially the autoimmune illnesses, is, you know, our tendency is to look what's wrong with the body. And we should be looking first what's wrong with the environment.
That's right. That's really good. That's super good.
That was your idea and it was excellent.
I like that. We're gonna write that one down. But you sparked just two things that came to mind. I really wanted to mention is that when you're looking at the FLCCC protocols, they're really heavy on LDN, right? So I wanted to mention that LDN acts on the toll-like receptors, and the toll-like receptors are upregulated in SEERS. Okay. So, you know, I'm like, okay, so this is working in these patient population, and we're also seeing it in the SEERS patient. So there's a little bit of overlap there. I thought that's really interesting. And then the other part is how they're going heavy on the mast cell activation syndrome. And so a lot of the FLCCC will bring in a lot of antihistamines and things to really help that. In SEERS, every nucleated cell in your body's histamine genes are turned on. So you really don't have mast cell. I mean, just mast cell, right? It's every nucleated gene, you are a histamine storm. And so we're seeing this, FLCCC, we're seeing how they're treating and it's working. And I can see how that would work for SEERS as well. You're following me with that kind of overlap there. Is really interesting.
This is why I always want people to remember that these concepts are ideas.
That's right.
You know? And we're describing, you know, it's back to describing the elephant, you know, everybody's describing the same. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and sometimes it's actually both the trunk, it's just we're speaking different languages. And so we name them differently. And that's what I mean, you know, for practitioners and patients, because I just, you know, there's so many vocabulary wars or semantic wars.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like, in fact, you know, this is germane to long haul, because, you know, what years ago, if somebody had, even still to this day, somebody will come in and they have chronic fatigue, God forbid, I suggest that they could have, you know, a tick-borne illness underneath it, you know, and the same thing can happen. People can come in and be sure that they have, you know, tick-borne disease and looks more like a chronic viral thing with the, you know, mold thing. And again, we can get wedded to what we understand is happening in our body. And I encourage people, use your intuition, but understand that, you know, be open, because sometimes intuition gets locked into the first story you read that kind of fits it. So keep an open mind, and just know that we're treating the same thing with different names.
That's right.
And just read and go back to, like, okay, so we're treating inflammation, and as Kelly pointed out, you know, sometimes when we're treating mast cell stuff, it's not, you know, mast cells produce 1,000 chemicals and lots of other cells in the body produce histamine. So it's not always so straightforward.
Yeah, you know? No, I think that's so important, because I see a lot of people going to like a Lyme doctor and getting diagnosed with Lyme, or going to a mold doctor and go, you know, like whatever the soup du jour is, you have to be careful. Like, and this is why I really appreciate what you just said, and I think it's understated, is that people have their idea of what they have, or a doctor has an idea, because they're doing the best they can. Like, maybe, you know, that they really are, there's no ill will, but like maybe they treat Lyme. And so they're, you know, treating you for Lyme. So it's like, I really do rely heavily on intuition. I really think that is very important. Especially when it's your body, it's your health. Make sure that whatever you're doing is well with your soul. Make sure that you're, you know, you're doing it for the right reason, not because your neighbor got better from it. And that I bring this back again, is that that's when people say, Kelly, what did you do to get better? I don't ramble off like what the blah, 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 because it's like, that's what I did, right? That's what I did. You know, I don't, you know, but I think this is a really great discussion about how like your analogy with the elephant, we're all hanging on to different pieces, or maybe we're hanging on and calling it a different thing. It's just like, we're seeing like all the protocols that are working. There's some similarities. There's some things that can help. But again, I think I'm always preaching about the foundations, right? Like really, you got to sleep and poop. That's your job. You have to sleep and eliminate. And then we're going to talk, you know, like other things, but that's just such a great message.
Yeah. Well, thank you. No, that is the basics. It's the basics. Yeah. And the other note is that I'm hoping that more and more doctors who are in this field of, I can even the, like I said, I spoke with, we interviewed Dr. Corey in the FLCC, and he is really interested in learning more and more as he's realizing that, my God, you know, we weren't taught any of this. And we all need to share, because there are so, and it's happening. I really see it happening, that so many doctors who focus on Lyme are also really, really very much more aware of mold. Yeah. Yep. And mast cell, and the same thing with a lot of the people who have been focused on mold, being just more aware and of the other possibilities. Because this is an argument I had with the good Dr. Shoemaker, but I don't think people get mold sensitivity or mycotoxin sensitivity unless they had an underlying infection that's changed their immune reactivity.
Because we've lived for mold for that, how long has mold been around, right?
Yeah, we've evolved. Like I said, we always lived with it, and that's why, you have five people in the family and only one person is reacting. Because something else turned on turned off parts of the cell, parts of this communication system, because that's the point. The immune system is a big communication system, and it's not a system. It actually is just part of your body, which is one big bag of soup, and everything talks to everybody. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's no systems. We made systems up because we need to break the body down.
That's right. That's what the human mind needs to do.
To conceptualize stuff. But, your nervous system and your immune system use the same means of communication. They're the same system, So it's everything. And yet when you're sick, we need to get down to specifics. And so we just have to hold those two opposing thoughts all the time. It's everything. And yet I need the one thing. Okay.
Right.
And just keep bouncing back between those things, and know that you're going to find practitioners who are going to give you some answers, and just keep looking. None of us have all the answers. I'm learning every day. And I think that's one of the reasons we do these, is because it's this incredible chance to like talk to smart people and go like, oh, that's a good idea. So anyways, I'm rambling. I apologize to our audience if they heard this talk before. But Kelly, you gave us some great ideas. And, and the water thing, like I said, I've been fascinated with water, with playing with structured water, playing with hydrogen water. And it sounds like you guys have found a way to mix it all together. And I will look into this. It's called WEO.
Yes. WE-O.com. You can learn all about our science and our team. We have an amazing team and researchers, engineers. We're stacked, and we are just 2023. We're going to come out blazing with clinical data. So it'll be really great.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to it. So thank you very much. I really appreciate you being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.